speak about Lorentz invariance violation phenomenology with neutrinos and GeV photons.
Okay, in this talk, yes, I will tell you something about how can we test actually Lorentz invariance violation using neutrinos, high energy neutrinos, and using high energy photons. So first of all, I will give a very brief introduction on what are the sources, astrophysical sources, that I will concentrate on. And these are called gamma ray bursts. So I will give you a brief introduction on gamma ray bursts. Then I will tell you how neutrinos, high energy neutrinos, can be generated from these sources in a particular model that is called the fireball model. So I'll give you a brief introduction on that. And then we will enter inside really the heart of the talk, where I'll show you how actually Lorentz invariance violation can be tested using high energy neutrinos and high energy photons. High energy photons have been detected recently from a satellite that is called Fermi, and actually there was a gamma ray burst that is 130427A that was very bright, and it allowed us to make really a study on Lorentz invariance violation analysis. And then I will give you my conclusions. Okay, first of all, as I told you, a brief introduction on what are gamma ray bursts. So in the astrophysics community, we know that we have two populations of gamma ray bursts. We have short gamma ray bursts and long gamma ray bursts. We think that short gamma ray bursts are associated to the merging of two neutron stars, while long gamma ray bursts are associated to the collapse of a very massive stars. And when the star collapses, it produces a black hole, and somehow a jet is generated out from the black hole. The mechanism to generate this jet is very complicated, but this is one of the models that we think. And this jet actually is not a uniform jet. It's a jet that is filled of several shells. And the shells interact between themselves, as we see here in this region. And there, and during the interaction, we have the gamma ray production. So what we see actually, what is called the gamma ray burst, is the production of gamma rays that we see from this interaction in the shell. This is one of the models. Now, one of the big mysteries in astrophysics is the composition of this jet. If the jet is purely electron and positron, or if there are hadrons inside the jet. So this is one of the big mysteries. This is one possible model, but of course there are other models that can be considered, and I will not go into the details in this talk. Then, after the gamma ray emission, what we have is that the jet interacts with the external medium. And in this interaction, we have what is called an afterglow, that is a forward shock. And in this case, we have the X-ray, optical, and radio emission. This is very important because this emission is important as it is allowed to determine the redshift. That means the distance of the source. So thanks to this emission, now we know that these sources are at cosmological distance. These sources, these gamma ray bursts, are the most luminous object in the universe. What we use in astrophysics is a parameter that is the luminosity. And we can compare the luminosity of the sun, or the luminosity of a supernova, or a luminosity of a galaxy with the gamma ray burst luminosity. And we can see how these sources really are luminous. This means that we can use these sources to test astrophysical and other and fundamental physics, even at very, very large distance, so because they are very luminous. And even if it's already 20 years or even more that we know these sources and these sources have been detected, there are a lot of open questions on these sources. What we know for sure is that these sources are at cosmological distance, which means that their redshift is mostly bigger than one. So they are at cosmological distance. But there are a lot of open questions. like one is if these sources can be used as the sources of the ultra-energy cosmic rays that have been recently also detected by Auger and several telescopes. Another thing, as I told you before, is what is the composition of the jet? If the jet is purely leptonic or if there are hadrons in the jet. And this is very important to understand for astrophysical reasons, to understand how the energy is transported away, but also for fundamental physics region, and also for Lorentz invariance violation, as we will see. And also another thing that we don't know is what is the mechanism responsible of the high energy emission that we have recently detected. So these are a few questions. So now I would like to tell you how really neutrinos can be produced in these sources. As I've shown you before, in this model, the electrons can be accelerated and during the shells, during the interaction between the shells. And in this, the electrons are accelerated and produce what is called the gamma ray emission. In the same region where electrons are accelerated, it is possible to have, it is possible to have acceleration also of protons. With the same mechanism. Protons can be accelerated in the magnetic field, and so the protons find themselves within a bath of photons around. So we have protons and photons in the same physical place. So what happened here is that inside the jet, we have protons that can be accelerated actually up to 10 to the 20 electron volt, and these protons find themselves in a bath of photons. So what we can have is what is called photon-meson interaction, which means that the proton can interact with the photon, and actually this is the process in particle physics. This is a delta resonance. This is where this interaction is most efficient. And then we have the production of a pi plus and a neutron. So this pi plus actually can decay in a muon plus and a neutrino muonic, and then the muon can again decay, and what we have at the end is two neutrino muonic and one neutrino electronic, one electronic neutrino. So we expect that from this mechanism we can have some neutrinos, as we can see, and mainly the neutrino that we expect is muonic neutrino and electric neutrino. Now, in each of these processes, the neutrino take only 5% of the energy of the proton. So since we have a photon energy at MeV, the proton energy that is good for this delta resonance is 10 to the 16 electron volt. So taking 5% of this energy, it means that we expect from a gamma ray burst a 100 TeV neutrino emission. This is the energy of the neutrino that we expect. And an important thing to understand is that we expect that these neutrinos are coincident with the gamma rays, okay? So from the theory, we expect that these are coincident in time. They are produced, and then we should arrive at the same time, both the gamma rays and the neutrino. So what we have to look is to 100 TeV neutrinos coincident in time and direction from the gamma ray burst. And if we go into the detail of the calculation, we can also estimate what is the number of the neutrino that we expect from a population of gamma ray burst that we have in 1 year. So we made a deeper calculation considering what is the fraction of energy of protons that goes to pions, that this is typically 20%. And then we estimate what is the typical flux of neutrino for one from one gamma ray burst. And what is the number of events that we expect at a neutrino telescope. So we have estimated that for a kilometer cube neutrino telescope, we expect 0.01 event per burst. Taking into account that more or less we have 1,000 events, 1,000 GRBs, gamma ray bursts per year, we expect to have between 10 and 20 events per year correlated with gamma ray bursts. So this is what we expect, to have more or less between 10 and 20. 20 is a very optimistic value, but what we expect is actually 10 events. 10 events of 100 TeV neutrinos per year, and this should be correlated in time and direction with the gamma ray burst. So this is an important point. So if we take all the gamma ray bursts in 1 year, this is the number that we expect. Another thing is that, as I told you, we in the gamma ray burst, the model we have the collapse of a massive star into a black hole. And then we have the generation of a jet. Now, the jet can come out, can be successful in coming out from the envelope star, but it can also be choked, so we don't see any gamma ray burst in that case. In any case, during this process, when the jet is trying to go out from the stars, we have an interaction of the protons with a bath of photons that have lower energies in this case. These are X-ray photons. And in this interaction, I will not go into the detail, not to annoy you, but what is important to understand is that we expect to have emission of TV neutrinos. So not 100 TV, but only TV, one TV neutrinos, more or less. And this is expected from the collapsar model. So these neutrinos are expected to be few seconds before the gamma ray burst itself. Okay, so this is another possibility of source of neutrinos. So from a gamma ray burst, we expect 100 TV neutrinos coincident in time, and also TV neutrinos that can anticipate by a few seconds the gamma ray burst itself. And also in this case, we expect 10 events per year. So this is the number that is expected. So why really we want to study neutrino at all? Why neutrino is an interesting particle, and why not to study only protons, cosmic rays, and photons? Well, neutrino has a lot of advantages. First of all, photons can be absorbed during the journey from the source to the Earth. And then also protons can lose any information on the source because they can be affected by magnetic field. So neutrino is a very nice particle because it can give us information directly on the source. So it is neutral, so the trajectory is not affected by magnetic field as the proton is. It's also stable, it doesn't decay like the neutron that it decays. It makes only weak interactions, so really give us information on regions that are opaque to photons. And so can escape from deeply inside the source. So this is why neutrino is a very nice particle and can give us a lot of information that we cannot have only with photons and protons. So also an important point to understand it is that it is enough to detect even one neutrino to have an information, because if we detect even one neutrino and we can connect it with the gamma ray burst, then we are sure that there are hadrons in the jet. It will solve the question if there are hadrons in the jet. And also, it will tell us if gamma ray burst can be considered as possible sources of ultra-energy cosmic rays. So it is in this sense, I want you to understand that it is not important to have 10 or 20 events of neutrino. It is enough to have only one neutrino to understand it. This will be the smoking gun for this. Since neutrinos we make only weak interaction, the problem is that we need huge detector to detect these neutrinos. And this is a big problem, but the interaction that we want is the neutrino that interacts with the nucleon, and then what we actually detect is a muon, is not a neutrino. So this is the thing. Okay, so this is the point. So what we looked for in order to detect a neutrino is actually the interaction of the neutrino with a nucleon, and then we have a muon, and actually what we detect is the Cherenkov light of the muon into a medium. So from the Cherenkov light of the muon, we are able to see if there was a neutrino interaction or not. And actually what a telescope does, I will go into the detail of the telescope in a moment, but the important point here is what we use is also the Earth. So what we are actually looking at is the neutrinos, where the interaction happen below the surface of the Earth. So let's say if here there is a telescope and the neutrino make the interaction below the telescope. So this is because we have a lot of atmospheric muon that come from above, from the sky. So in order to distinguish muon that come from astrophysics neutrino from muon that come from atmospheric neutrino, from atmospheric muons, we consider only the neutrino that come from below the telescope. So that come from below the Earth and pass all the Earth, and then we are sure that this should be astrophysical neutrinos. So this is an important point that in 2010 a huge neutrinos telescope was built, and this is called IceCube, and this is a kilometer cube detector. And this telescope should be able to detect the neutrinos that I'm talking about. Actually, the aim, this telescope was actually built to detect the gamma ray burst neutrino, because first of all, there was the prediction on this neutrino flux, and then they built the telescope. So first of all, there was Amanda that was smaller than IceCube, and now we have IceCube that is it has been completed in 2010. So IceCube, you can see, is huge, and actually with the detection is done through the optical modules that detect the Cherenkov light. So what, as I told you, what you use is the neutrino muon that interact, and then we have a muon, and then we have the Cherenkov light. Okay, so in 2010, the neutrino telescope was completed, IceCube was completed, and then it appears in a paper of Abbas et al. In Nature, where they claim that they've made an analysis considering a sample of 1 year and a half of event of gamma ray burst. So they've taken all the gamma ray bursts during 1 year and a half or 2 years, and they didn't find any neutrino event from this gamma ray burst. So this was actually very disappointing, because it was challenging. First of all, it was challenging the fireball model, was what I told you before, because if you don't see any event, then maybe there are not hadrons in the jet, and we expected to see at least 10 events, and they didn't see any. So this was challenged, but then several papers came out to correct several factors in the fireball model, so the fireball model was not challenging. An important thing to do to say is that to make this analysis, the people of IceCube, what did is to consider a gamma ray burst, the direction of gamma ray burst, and then to open a very small window around the time of the gamma ray burst. So, because they thought that the neutrino should be coincident with the gamma ray burst. But it may be, if we consider Lorentz invariance violation, it may be that actually neutrino can come before or can come later gamma ray burst. And this was not taken into account in this. So what we have done, in collaboration with Giovanni, is actually to consider the fact that during this propagation, neutrinos can come later or before, and so to consider what will be the effect of Lorentz invariance violation, if we consider. So we know that there are some quantum gravity models that predict that Lorentz invariance actually can be broken, and what we have considered is only the linear expansion of these, only in the linear breaking terms. If we consider this possibility, then we have a time dispersion over cosmological distance between a high energy particles, like neutrinos or also photons, and a low energy one. So we have a difference in time. So we expect they should arrive at different time. And this time dispersion depends on the mass of the breaking Lorentz invariance violation term, which we think is close to the Planck scale. And it depends also on the size, on the sign of this xi that after we call also s, that say if we expect the high energy event later or before the low energy event. So this difference in time depends on these two parameters and also of course on the redshift, on the distance of the source. So actually if high energy neutrinos, so what we thought is that the high energy neutrino may arrive at different time from the photon of GRBs, and we can parameterize this different in time, this delay time in this way, where we see that this parameter tell us if the neutrino anticipate or are be delayed respect to the photons. This is the parameter that is a function of the redshift. This is the energy of the neutrinos, and this is the Lorentz invariance violation mass scale. Okay, so this parameter can be determined only, both this parameter and this parameter can be determined only experimentally. Okay, so if we consider this possibility, actually, if there is this in vacuum dispersion, then we actually expect to never have a really conclusive gamma ray burst neutrino detection, because we cannot really connect in time the two events. And also you cannot expect that this event coincide from the temporal point of view. So if this relation between time and energy is correct, actually what we expect is to have these neutrinos distributed in an energy time plot in quite a funny way. And we will go and see this. So if we have purely background neutrino, what we have in this plot, this is the difference in time between the high energy neutrinos and the photons, okay? And this is the energy of the neutrino. So if we have purely background event, we see that there is a random distribution of neutrinos into this plot. But if we consider now Lorentz invariance violation that affect, and actually we put some parameters, like we think that the mass of the Lorentz invariance violation can be 0.1, the Planck scale, and we think that neutrino can anticipate photon. This is the parametrization. If we consider these two parameters and we look where the neutrino from gamma ray bars should fall, we have a gray region. Now, why we have a gray region? Because gamma ray bars have different redshift. So we here consider this band tell us all the possible redshift that we can have, from 0.1 up to 8, I think. This is the redshift range that we have considered. So what we say is that if neutrinos come from gamma ray burst, and if the Lorentz invariance violation hypothesis is correct, then we don't have just a random distribution of events, but our neutrino should fall inside the gray region. This is the important point that we have to understand. Okay, so what we have done is actually to look at the event that there are a few events that actually IceCube have detected, but they didn't consider as events because they were not coincident temporally with the gamma ray burst. So one very important event is the 109 TV event, and this come 14 hours before the gamma ray burst 09-12-30A. And actually, it is a really a very good resolution from the direction point of view. One thing I forgot to mention is that the ice cube detecting with the ice. So the resolution is not so good because the Cherenkov light make a cone, and so we have like 1 or 2 degree resolution. And so this source was actually, it's really like pointed back to the gamma ray burst, but the problem, it was 14 hours before. So I had several discussions with the PI of the telescope and asked him if this event was coincident with the gamma ray burst, if it was, what should be the significance of this event. And so he told me that this should have been a 5 sigma event. If it was really coincident, this was considered as an event from a gamma ray burst. So this was quite exciting because from our hypothesis, the Lorentz variance violation, we see that this event actually fall inside the gray region. And this uncertainty here is just the uncertainty in the energy, okay, that we have, because we don't know exactly the energy of the neutrino. So this was one first event. Then I went and see in the literature that actually I found another event, and this is a 3.3 TV event, and this also was anticipating the gamma ray burst 3,000 seconds. We see this gamma ray burst, but the direction here is less precise. It's like only 6 degrees. And again, this event fall inside the gray region. And then we have only another third event, that is 1.3 TV event, that also is 2,000 seconds before, and also anticipate these gamma ray bars, and the resolution of 2 degrees. We have to say that for this event, actually there is a large probability to be really a cosmic rays, but all three events may be actually be also cosmic rays. So this is also a possibility. But the nice thing is that these three events all fall into the gray region. And so this was quite an exciting result from the Lorentz invariance point of view. So what we actually wanted, in order to check the Lorentz invariance violation, what we actually would like is to constrain really the Lorentz invariance violation mass. And what we see that if we consider these two events and we try to draw a line with the slope, this slope is consistent to have a Lorentz invariance violation mass that is the Planck mass divided by 25. This is actually consistent with what found by Amelino, Carmelli, and Smolin in 2009, where they made a very nice analysis on the Fermi data at that time. And they found that in the case of advanced event, this is actually the constraint that we get. But if we consider delayed event, the constraints are stronger. Okay, so if we consider delayed event, actually the Lorentz invariance violation mass should be bigger than the Planck scale. But in the advanced case, the constraint is consistent. So this is actually nice, also the consistencies. And also one thing that we have to mention that we cannot exclude at this point is that the Lorentz invariance violation can be different, can affect in a different way neutrinos from photons. So the constraint that we find from photons maybe are not relevant for neutrinos as the spin is different. So it may be if there is no universality, then we can have two different constraints. So this is also a very nice thing to check and with the data. So what is interesting, okay, is that is also that in the last year the IceCube came out with a number of events that seems to be well above the background, and they have almost 20 events. And actually, they also correlated this event with the astrophysical sources. So here the part is more a part where there is more density of event. So an exciting thing to do is to take all these events and check the possibility if they're okay, they are in coincident in direction, but check what we have suggested to the IceCube people is to open their window time and check if this event may fall in the gray region or if there is another region that they can fall. So the IceCube people, at least the PI, assured me that they will open the window time and will check for this possibility. So this is why very exciting, and the result may be available soon. So another thing I want to discuss is the recent gamma ray burst that have been detected above 1 GeV. And this is the GeV emission from this gamma ray burst. This is a very nice gamma ray burst because it was very bright and very close, and it allowed us to really make an analysis on the GeV emission from this burst. So what we have considered is the emission of this burst above 5 GeV, and here we have the energy of the photons, and here we have the time rescaled to the respect to the trigger time of the gamma ray burst. So if we consider the event above 5 GeV, what we have found that there are lags in this emission, and what we actually think is that these gamma ray bursts may be considered like several mini bursts inside the GRBs, and in each mini burst, the first photon is the highest energy one, and this is quite interesting. These lines are drawn with the slope used from the neutrino results. So these lines are in this line we use exactly M Planck divided by 25 and S equal to 1. That this was what we found in the neutrino result. And it is nice to see that this line actually fit somehow also this photon result. So this is the same figure, just we have rescaled all our superimposing by region translation all the three lines in one line. And this is what we find. And so looking at these gamma ray bars, what we find again is that maybe this constraint on this on the Lorentz invariance relation term is really the mass Planck divided by 25. And as I told you, this is consistent with what found before related to the advanced emission, but this is not consistent to what is found in the case of delayed emission. And actually, we have to say that also from the analysis of Fermi and AGN analysis by Hess, they have produced more stringent bounds. So in light of this bound, maybe the quantum space-time interpretation may fail in this case, may be disfavored respect to the astrophysical interpretation. So of course, astrophysical interpretation is also, obviously, is also an interpretation. So in any case, it is interesting to check for this effect. Okay. So another point that is very important to check is that this delay time is strongly depend on the redshift. So what is interesting is also to check what happens if we consider gamma ray bursts of different redshift and see if there is we can see the effect of the redshift inside this time delay. So what we have done is to consider a gamma ray burst at very high redshift and look if we have the same features that we have for the other GRBs. Simply considering the slope, the line that we have, and rescaling it for the redshift factor. So if we consider the line that we have for the other burst and rescale it for the redshift factor, this is what we get. So this is also an interesting thing that also it fit. It seems that also rescaling the redshift factor, we get quite consistent results. Also, again, we don't find a significant result, but it's intriguing that this photon of maximum energy fit the lines. Again, it's just a suggestion. It doesn't want to be the truth, but it may be that all these effects are astrophysical, and I insist on that, but It is a nice way to see how Lorentz invariance relation can affect all these results. Okay, and then this is the plot where we have all the photons that we have analyzed until now and the two neutrinos. Considering this slope, considering this Lorentz invariance relation model with the mass divided by 25 and S equal to 1. So we can put all the photons and neutrino in the same slope, and this is quite nice. Okay, so I come to my conclusions. Okay, so we feel like that there is some genuine insight hiding behind the neutrino and these gamma ray bars, of course. Maybe all these effects are astrophysical, but in any case, it is very important to study also the quantum space-time interpretation and to look for Lorentz invariance relation part. And also, it is important to have a good understanding. What I forgot to say regarding the neutrino part is that now we have a lot of events from IceCube. So what is important to do is to look for the probability to have a neutrino coincident with the gamma ray burst at the same time, but also to look for to estimate the probability to have neutrino related to with the gamma ray burst, considering the Lorentz invariance relation term. So to make an estimate of the probability in a larger sense point of view. And also, the same is also true for the GV emission from this burst. That's all.
It seems to me that you're overinterpreting the results of the recent nearby Fermi GRB. There is clear evidence that there is no high-energy Fermi photon ever before the onset of the low-energy emission from any GRB. And it has been shown that at least for photons, this mass or energy scale is at least about two orders of magnitude beyond your tentative suggested scale. So that is clearly ruled out. Nonetheless, for neutrinos, it can in principle be different. And therefore, I think it is indeed worth studying more carefully. I would like to say, though, that if you go to up to 6 degrees from the direction of the GRB, it's not clear if it's at all consistent with the direction, even if it is the larger the possible direction on the sky, the larger your background and so on. And even if you have 5 sigma, if it were during the prompt emission itself of that GRB, once you go to, say, a day before or after, and once you go to 100 or a few hundred GRBs, your chance coincidence is not negligible.
Okay, so I agree with you that in the case of the gamma ray burst, it was just what we wanted to show is just it was an opportunity to go inside the source, like to make to make an analysis, like to make an X-ray, like the how do you say that? That in this source you really could see all the GV photons. Of course, I agree with you that in general we don't see GV photons before the MeV photons, and this put a constraint on that. So we have a constraint also from the delayed emission. But this was just a suggestion. It's a suggestion on what to do the analysis in the case that we have very bright source and a lot of events, this in the photons point of view. Regarding the neutrino, I also agree. And actually, from this, what is important that for this 20 event, they should have a good accuracy with the direction. So of course, the golden neutrino was the 109, that it was 0.2 degree. So this really points back to the source. But if it is 6 degree, I agree that it's very hard to make some prediction. So yes, of course, because you introduce a lot of background, I know, but they have now a way to deal with the background. So they've improved the background. So it may be that that it works also.
Just two brief questions. First, in this gray band, I assume that your probability distribution is not uniform at all, because of course at the higher the rate is not uniform, the probability distribution of the event, because the size of the universe increases with Z and then the experimental sensitivity decreases. Can you use this? And second brief question, very close to the previous one, but have you accurately computed the probability, taking into account your time interval, your angular interval, that the events you have are purely random, because you should compute this probability?
Yes, we plan to do it when we have a sample, and we plan to estimate the probability, sure. And the probability should not be the same, yes. So this is one thing that we...
How you reconcile your proposal of Lorentz violation, okay, with the studies that have been done, I believe, in the 80s on the supernova neutrinos, where that they revealed actually that the neutrinos and photons arrived to the Earth at the same time?
Okay, but from the supernova neutrino, the constraint was very low because it was only 0.01 the mass Planck, so it doesn't affect our results because you find that the Lorentz invariance violation mass in that case is only 0.01. It's bigger than 0.01, the Planck scale. Now we have stronger constraint on that.
Okay, let's thank Daphne again.